Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a podcast to Harry while driving, and just thanking him for giving me the original report of the 48 animals which are threatened by the raising of the dam. Now, firstly, Harry is a pretty amazing emerging, I suppose, environmental slash political leader, sort of presence, and you can sort of feel the energy there. I'm sort of very impressed, and being an old guy myself, you're no longer in the competition, so, oh, I might be as good as that particular person. So when you see something, you appreciate it. And so thank you for Harry. I sent an email to Harry asking for the 48 animals which are under threat. So I'm just going to give this podcast. And as you can see, possibly hear, it's a podcast while driving. And I produce something like, sometimes upwards of, five podcasts a time. So they're really more voice memos, and I have to use slots of time while driving. Now, what's happening here is it's late in the evening. I'm driving off to pick up my children from Scouts. Look at this. Sorry, this is bizarre. Sorry, I'm at the traffic lights, and this light is changing in intensity, up and down in intensity. I don't understand what it is. Okay, getting back to it. Overall, look, I'm a scientist, and I can quickly tell you that the reports from the government are not, they look like scientific reports, because they use some scientific words, they have got some authority with them, and that scientists do not tend to promulgate arguments, and, there's much more considered, so let's make no... let's not be deceived here. They're not scientific reports. I suppose not fake, but they're are cloaked in sort of letterhead and scientific language officialdom, and you want to take them off these, and they're not designed to inform. They're designed to win an argument. So why are they scientific reports that I've read from the government? Well, firstly, they miss some vital things. They talk about the risk of flooding and the floodplains and stuff like that, but they don't explain or explain the situation to a user qualified in the art. I'm sort of struggling for words here. They don't do that. They try to convince, and they miss out some vital things. So we're talking about climate events, right? 100 years climate events. And nowhere in all the documentation do they ever mention the word climate change. Now, climate change is going to do two things. It's going to increase the frequency of events and the severity of events. It's going to make things worse. And it's also going to cause sea levels to rise. Now, although by 2090 the consensus is 74 centimetres, we'll be lucky for 74 centimetres, but we are talking of 7 metres and more within the 200-year time range. This is the time for some of the ice sheets in Antarctica to really start melting. And, of course, the place that gets it is Windsor. So Windsor's only... or some pieces, parts of Windsor are not 7 meters above sea level. It's incredible if you look at it. So the importance of this is as the sea level rises, the drawing power of the floodwaters increase. As it sits there, it's more to sit there. I'm just going to have to stop and look here. And, that's cracking. Yep, I think I'll be able to park in here. So I'll be with you in a second. And hopefully in my car I'll get some light to read through those 48 animals, animals which are under threat. And my aim is to memorise them. I'll be back to you with you soon. Okay, starting off again after that quick break. Yeah, look, I'll just quickly say, there's often these fake or I would say junk documents. And so as a scientist, having written scientific papers yourself, you're very much aware of the lack of candor, lack of references, lack of thorough review. So a thorough review would mention the word climate change, but it's a political document, so you can't have a New South Wales government citing climate change. Yet, the end result of that, short-term political outlook, is that various documents are much lower quality. Obviously, if you have lower quality science going in for political reasons, it's there. So that's a point. Another very, very important point is that insurers will insure development which is flood-proof. This is sort of defies logic. Basically, if you build a building in the way of a flood, it actually means that the water that has greater resistance going about it. So if you are to build a building, it is best lower insurance to build buildings with a clearance of say 10 metres underneath it. So the so there's a whole great number of things, and yeah, so that's another example of what I'd call junk. Really the junk status of the document. So lack of climate change, lack of references to proper flood design. So you can actually build entire cities. It's been done. Venice is one example, but there's around the world. And, of course, it would add intense value to Australia if we were able to use our scientists properly and actually make I'm going through here, I'm just checking, oh, that's beautiful here. Use our scientists and actually design a high technology flood-proof suburb where the houses are on stilts as necessary, which means that you can develop without, so even if we put the dam wall up, if we develop, we're actually going to create another dam wall of things. And the point is, the argument is not the important thing. The important thing is that the government is putting things to you, and giving you, loading up the opposition, trying to subvert them, and also just load junk documents onto it. The other thing is that they don't really make a very clear synopsis. So again, a scientific literature, you work on it for days. It definitely goes out for peer review. So you understand that your document is just not a rhetoric document, a debate in Parliament. It's not something you give a minister to debate and hit the electorate across the head. Your document is for peer review. And it's got to be a balance. It's got to have some candour in it. So this is really, really, I feel missing in here. I'll just have to lean down across here. Sorry, mate. So I was going to, I've got the printout of the 48 annals, which I'm going to look. A bit of noise here as I read through it. And lo and behold, I've taken my microphone off, so it's going to hear a bit of zonking as I unzonk it and my glasses unentangled. So it's not, this is live podcasting. This is reality podcasting. I think rather than calling it voice memoing, which is the term that people put to it. Yeah. So, So the lack of candor is the lack of clarity. So essentially, flooding in floodplains nourishes them. Flooding in the Blue National Park will scar it. Now, again, if you look at it, they will say they're describing it as a 16 meter high airspace. It will not increase the capacity of Warragamba Dam. As if you read through it. Now, of course, a scientist would say there is a series of ways of describing it, and one way is airspace for this. So they would modify the arguments and draw them back. Now, I must admit, as a teacher dealing with the education department, a lot of documents you come up and you just read it and you say, this has just been written specifically for this purpose to get this through, and it hasn't seen these sorts of things. So there's, it is true that Australians in general are not trained scientifically to put things through. Now, as I said before, what I wanted to do is actually commit this list to memory. And this is a very good list here under details. And essentially, what we have to say is that there are over 48 areas, but 40, it appears to be five biomes or regions which are important. It's interesting that they're talking about places here which are not necessarily in the dam area. But the Castlereagh, firstly, let's go through the bioregions. The Castlereagh Scribbly Gum and Angie's Bank. So that would be down there. Scribbly Gum is having this moth which eats on the side of it. Woodlands of the Sydney Basin bioregion, natural temperate grassland and southeastern highlands. That's two. Three is shale sandstone transition forest of the Sydney Basin bioregion. And those are critically endangered. It's endangered, but critically endangered. Now just tell you what a shale is. A shale is a sedimentary rock with high enough iron content, which creates the iron migration, and you get the cleavage planes. So you'll get strata, but the strata will cleave. The upland basalt eucalypt forest of the Sydney Basin bioregion, that's endangered. So basalt's volcanic, so this is the entire, if I can go through the entire region, but we do have this basalt increases. Now, around the dam, I can't see that actually happening. So then white box, yellow box, Blakey's red gum, grassy woodland and derived native grassland. That's critically endangered. Now, it says for those five areas, for threatened ecological communities where the distribution is well known, maps are derived from recovery plans, state vegetation maps, remote sensing imagery and other sources. Where threatened ecological community distributions are less well known, existing vegetation maps and point location data are used to produce indicative distribution maps. So I don't know. This is a detail. It is actually not clear to me, unfortunately, that the area, I've looked at the area on Google Maps, the area which will be flooded or scarred by this, so it's an airspace, sort of reading through it. Now, the critical thing here is I don't necessarily think the documents they've put out are fake and misleading and unscientific. So that being saying, the idea is a purely political puff. That's you to go at it and actually not get to the basics of it. That they are taking our money, not doing the science, and spending it and not informing it. For all the money they're taking it, they're not making it absolutely clear that they're going to scar the Blue Mountains, undernash the floodplains, and through developments make the flooding worse. So if you build a building, if you put a development in the path of a flood, you will slow that flood up. You'll make it worse. So there's all these things. The point is not that they haven't thought of it. They haven't disclosed it. They haven't gone through the process of peer review, consultation. They have put it up here, and it's sort of comparative consulting. So it's a bit like presenting your case to court. That you wait, and there is this contempt basically with it. See how I'm going for time here. So the idea is that I'll read through it. So they're the land zones. Now clearly here there's no basalt in that area, and these are endangered areas. So it's going to be again unclear from this level that these will be in that area. Okay, so we'll just go through, and I'm not going to read the actual anatomical name. However, what I will do is I will create an app where you can actually press these things. There's something I can do that. So the Regent Honeyeater, critically endangered, species of species habitat known to occur within the area. The Curlew Sandpiper. Now, my understanding is that that is a shorebird, okay, sandpiper. The curlew is these quiet birds, critically endangered species habitat may occur within the area. So it is, the community may occur within the area. So let's, again, so you've got a few mains. The eastern bristlebird, endangered. So it's not critically endangered, it's endangered. The painted honeyeater is vulnerable. The swift parrot. The eastern curlew. The far eastern curlew. They're critically endangered. Now, if you actually look at the slopes going around the actual dam area, I don't know, it's hard to understand. The Australian painted snipe, endangered. So it's pretty, I suppose the basic point to get across here is a lot of these animals, we have, the take-home message is that our environment is, even if these birds aren't in the firing line, we are dealing with a sick, delicate environment that we have been given custodian of. So it's not for us to exploit. We are now understanding things. So when the first farmers came in and they first built the Warragamba Dam, they didn't have this. And when whites came in and cleared all the land, they didn't know all of this. But we now know this. The Macquarie perch, I suppose, and the Australian grayling. So once endangered, vulnerable. Okay, so all these things have got the same thing. Now, the frogs, the giant burrowing frog, the green and golden bella frog. Now, again, looking at the area about Lake Bungdong, where it will go, so that you're going to lose a few hundred metres maximum around that area. And they made some claims, which, you know, it's sort of rather hard to believe there. Little John's tree frog and heath frog, the stuttering frog and the southern barred frog in Victoria. So obviously it exists there, it's vulnerable, but it's got a different name in Victoria. So it's obviously got a larger habitat. Okay. So they're the birds, the frogs, the mammals. Okay. The large eared pied bat. The large pied bat. So a pied probably means it's a black and white bat. Now the spotted tail quoll, and for some reason the tiger quoll. So it's a southeastern mainland population. It's endangered in general. So again, the number of quolls in that region is given, you'd be able to work it out by the habitat. Now again, the issue is not whether this dam wall will go up. The issue is being able to quietly let the government down and say, look, the documents you've given us, if we've got a 5-star rating, we give them one star, because they're not peer-reviewed, they don't have the scientific candour. And so all this stuff is sort of like fighting a battle. You can expend all your ammunition really quickly on him. Okay, so the southern brown bandicoot the greater glider, the bush-tailed rock wallaby. So that is possibly in the area. I could imagine that being there. Now, the koala. Now, it says combined population, Queensland, New South Wales and Australian Capital Territory. So this is the koala. Now, it's vulnerable, but we know, unfortunately, scientifically, due to the gum trees and the poor fertility of the soil, that there's no major megafauna in the Blue Mountains. There's no koala population in the Blue Mountains in it per se, because you require a certain nutrition level for it to go up here. I've spoken with experts. I have spoken with koala experts. When I said, "Well, how come there's no koalas?" That they said, "Oh, well, you need certain contours of soil fertility to produce certain tree growth to make them habit." Occasionally, they will find a koala wandering through the Blue Mountains on search on multiple 100-kilometer trek, and they can take their DNA of it and look at it, stuff like that. But that being said, it is a desert environment. The Blue Mountains is very low fertility soil. That's simply because of the way it's formed on sandstone. And so although there's no koalas there, that's also a worry. So I wouldn't say that doing the dam is going to affect the koala population. The New Hollander mouse, the Puchilia, again, the grey-haired flying fox, grey-headed flying fox. Again, you've got to have animals of a certain, it's got to have a certain range. And of course, the more they fly and stuff like that. The issue here is not necessarily the animals, but I will try and learn this here. Now, they've got different plant species. Bine nose wattle, the downy wattle. Now the Acrophyllum australi, whatever that one is, the Astralasia elegans. So I think that's, I don't know whether you did plants, but the plants going here, there's, I think you must have gone over 48 plants as well. The Bosea oglosperma, the leafless tongue orchid, the black gum, the Camden white gum, and the Pean river gum. So those gums, right, are obviously not in the dam area. The yellow gnat orchid, the sunflower grevillea, small flower grevillea, and this is just called a shrub. It's endangered. It's the Haca Doherty. So Doherty, which is named after the Halicarus extra suburb extalia. The Kunzia cambegi, the Malacuta dene, the Pelagorum stralinum, the Persona erosa, the Pimela culverfora, the Pomaderus banera, the Paracillium pietium, the Paracillium Wibong, the Prostanta sinophila, the Pteris saxola. I don't think you've gone through this. Okay. Now, the smooth bush pea, the Kangaloon sun orchid, the austral toad fax. You've got to actually say, why are we getting all these plants and animals and regions which... It's the sort of junk science, and because there's the junk science has not been done, it's almost as if you've got research notes from someone doing it in the first couple of months of his PhD, or his or her PhD coming up. Now the reptiles, the pink-tailed worm lizard, the pink-tailed legless lizard, well, we don't know. The broad-headed snake, I know that was talked about. The forked, and these are migratory birds. And this is a marine bird, a fork-tailed swift, terrestrial species, the oriental cuckoo, horse-frilled cuckoo, the white-throated needle-tail, the black-faced monarch, the spectacled monarch, the yellow wagtail, the satin flycatcher, the rufous fantail, migratory wetland species. Okay, the curlew sandpiper comes up again here, and this is what I said, it's a wetland species, so we're not dealing with wetland. And you got, it just goes all over the place. Okay, this is extra information. And just going back across here, if I can go to the start here, I think this is the curlew. What are we doing? The curlew sandpiper, and I still remember that being referred to before. So I don't know whether I can, memorising all these is going to be all that helpful. Yeah, curlew sandpiper is 856, species 856, and it occurs again. So it's a bird, and now it's a list. okay, so these are not necessarily, well, some of them, it's critically endangered. The Latham snipes, the Japanese snipe, the eastern curlew, so they're repeating some of these a second time going through. Let's keep on going through, reading through this. The osprey, obviously, the common green shrank. So hopefully the common green shrank isn't, no, it's not going. So, the great egret, the cattle egret, the curlew sandpiper gets listed three times here. The orange cockatoo, it's Latham snipes, the white-bellied seagull, gets the white-throated needletail, the swift parrots, the rainbow bee-eater, keeps on getting listed through. Black fastmouth, the speckled monarch, the yellow wagtail, the satin flycatcher, the eastern curlew, far eastern curlew, named a third time, osprey, rufous fantail, painted snipe, the common green shank, a second time. So my question here is, what's this going through? It's been listed a second time here. Extravermation. Roots reported here are 20 species of the national significance, along with others introduced plants that are considered by the states and territory to pose a particularly significant threat to biodiversity. Okay, so there's weeds there as well. There's also a skylark is there, invasive species. So there's the common minor, the skylark, the mallard duck, the European goldfinch, European greenfinch, rock pigeon, domestic pigeon, nutmeg, matkin, house sparrow, Eurasian tree sparrow. These things, there's frogs, the cane toad. Oh God, I don't know what they're doing. Okay, mammals. These are pest mammals. The domestic dog, the goat, the horse, the cat. These are things that, for some reason, they've listed the cane toad in there. My godfather. And so that's all the way going through here, that entire list. So thank you for that list. So I hope that's going through it. So I think it was a politically valid thing to have that coffin there, that sort of brought that concept forward out of the muck. But in general, there is this horrible muck going across, and this strategy is necessary to actually introduce new levels, saying, look, the level that we Australians going forth, the youth coming across, is clarity and consciousness and vision. And essentially, the bottom line is that if you look at these people, these developments going in, there's not a soulless, if you look at Oran Park and all that type of, there's not a single soulless cell in it. This is because the people there, a lot of that development is owned by just a few people. There's, I think, two brothers who are extremely rich and well-connected in the government, getting these land grants, this Commonwealth land grants. And they build this in entire suburbs, and they have contempt for science. They have contempt for you. They just laugh at you. I think there's stories, why are the Greens watermelons? They're green on the inside, but pink. So they're green on the outside, but pink inside. So these people are not very sophisticated. The people against you are not very sophisticated, and they think nothing. They think by lying and putting fake stuff in, they don't see themselves. They see themselves as clever and outsmarting rather than robbing us, the community of the best minds, the best thoughts. They're particularly frightened of good minds thinking the way forward. So let's put this forward. The important thing is that they haven't talked about climate change. That is an important thing. They haven't talked about climate change. And another thing is, not having talked about climate change, they haven't made an attempt there to explain it clearly, that they're going to reduce the nourishment to the floodplains, because floodplains are floodplains, and it's going to scar. They haven't really described what is going on in the floodplain. There are floodplains because it's grown there through ancient times. So the mountains have eroded and built up a floodplain. And the floodplain is reached a point where there is no more, the water can't go anywhere. So essentially, and as the sea level increases, you're not going to go. Now the overall thing is that there is this idea of expanding the Sydney Basin. And people have from the time of Blaxland and Wentworth, the idea is exploit the Sydney Basin. However, and mine it and do all these things. However, the idea that we have this old idea of land grants that this is how everyone got there. They got the land, the government owned everything, and you hassle the government, and the government said, oh, well, you can have that, you can have that, oh, you can have that. It's not really thought that's a process. And the idea that the government gave land grants, gave a land grant to favoured people who supported the government and the sort of built the trust in the government. So here they're giving essentially a development grant. So they're giving the right to development to their favoured people. And their favoured people have said that we're not going to we want to build the way they've always built. We want to build these huge apartment blocks. We want to have huge people coming in, and more importantly, we want to build communities which are going to have crying needs and political landscape. They're going to be under-resourced. They're going to require schools and roads. We're not going to build them. And so, therefore, we're going to give you pre-packaged political issues to go forward. So one strategy would be is to call on international developers to come up with an alternative which develops a futuristic Sydney built on the floodplains, if you will, possibly. I would even say the low-density housing and raised up on stilts. Now, the important thing is that the stilts you could build to last 500 years and replace the buildings on top of them every 100 years. You know, it's one of those things. You have underground. I myself would have a concept of just free running bushland and the houses up on stilts. And then you've got the problems of fires coming through. And I think there must be a solution to that, that say sprinkler systems underneath the house. So if there's a fire coming along, it essentially, just sprinkles water on the underneath. And so this is the entire thing of, ember attack. And of course, if there's a flood, the floodwaters just go through it, either over the roads and stuff like that. But the housing and infrastructure are high up. But that's essentially how you build for floodplains. Essentially, this is stupidity upon stupidity. And I must admit, having been in the room with the various people at various times, they're not the brightest people, and they're at this critical threshold that if you are really not bright, you don't know that you're not bright. So at least hopefully I'm at the level that I've just realized, oh, I'm not bright. I will have to do things properly. So they're so not bright. They're thinking that we'll be able to go across. The issue for us is to just stealthily move, take charge of the goalposts, saying that we want to go forward, and rather than insisting they do things, because people who are bullies love it when the victim screams, that they get a great feeling of power. That's for them a sense. Obviously, they have no power. If you are really dumb, you've got no power in life, and you can be so stupid to think that your power is derived from making other people hurt. And indeed, unfortunately, that's what we're dealing with. In my humble opinion, the important thing is to hold the fort in that hurt transactions area and build up another campaign of slightly greater intellectual viewpoint. So thanks a lot for reading, being able to read through that. And there's obviously problems with those 48 animals, say like the koala or the shorebirds, things which are shorebirds, the way that they have just got such poor research. The main issue is that it is such poor research. It's going to be a long, hard campaign against these people. And hopefully, as a scientist, I will educate people on what a scientific document looks like, what a scientific approach looks like, and how we can actually be proper custodians of our land and of our future. And it means essentially you have to give control of your future to not the most powerful people, but the most intelligent and people with the correct candor, that we hand our future on. And when we peep from the past, people feel proud of the past. They don't go, oh, I've really come, I'm not building a suburb of Los Angeles. We're not building Los Angeles. This is where we have, I think Los Angeles has 60,000 homeless people and these rich mansions, and that polarization is built in there, and people just know that the rich people get protected by police. And they do really disturb us by using the government as their own tool. It means that their government eventually we lose trust in the government. So look, I really hope this gets through, and I'll pass it through. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.